and three, step two is, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And then step three is made the decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So, Tom, I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Hello, everybody. My name's Tom Dewart. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tom.
I'm still pretty nervous. I was nervous last week, and I'm more nervous this week. I don't know why that is. I asked my sponsor. I brought a little cheat book with me, 12 and 12. I called my sponsor today, and I said something to him about doing this tonight, and he says, well, 2 and 3 are pretty hard to explain. And I said, yeah, that's pretty right. That's very right. Very hard to explain, because for me, became willing to turn my will and stuff over to God. Here, let me, I got a cheat already. Okay, yeah, two, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Well, I didn't buy into that early on very well, because I really didn't think there was that much wrong with me when I got here. So, and I'm sure there are a lot of people that feel the same way I did. I came just to kind of get my drinking under control. I didn't come here to stop or much else. Maybe to, you know, get the wolf away from the door. But so, actually, when step one, you kind of surrender. Step two is also part of that. So when you actually do step one and mean it, step two is just a natural progression. So we're kind of ready to take step two, even if you don't understand what it is, which was me. You know, I had a religious background, upbringing. My parents were religious folks. They went to church every Sunday. They dragged me and my brothers there, whether we wanted to go or not. And once I got old enough to not go anymore, give them so much trouble, they just quit taking me. That's what happened. And I still haven't gotten back to any kind of structured, I'll call it structured religion. You know, I got married. My wife's Catholic. My children are all Catholic. I got married back in the day when, I don't know how many people would remember, you had to sign your kids over, so to speak. You know, you met with the priests and okay, this is what you're going to do, Tom. So, you know, I was okay with it. But so my wife took my kids to church, and my kids went to Catholic schools because her father, God bless him, felt that that's what they needed. I couldn't afford it. I was I was pretty heavy into my alcoholism by then. I was 20 and she was 17, and I couldn't afford private schools. So I said, as long as you want to do it, go right ahead, you know. But anyhow, that was me until I got to AA. That was me while I was in AA for a long time. And like I was trying to talk to Ike a little bit about it, you know, it's hard to say what happens or when it happens, but it happens. You know what I mean? I can't put a date or a time on it, but when you surrender and you start talking to people about higher powers and stuff, you know, I wasn't getting it. So my sponsor at the time said, you know, just make it the group, which is in this book, 12 and 12. Just make it the group, let that be your higher power. And that's kind of how I treated it. I would ask for help, and I would feed off the people that were in the groups, because I knew they were here getting sober. They had something that I wanted. You know, I was a new guy, always last one there, first one to leave, and didn't want to get too involved. Like I said, I just was there to try and learn how to slow it down or control it. So for me, came to believe a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. That was the group, and that worked, and that still works today. But you know, there are a lot of people that come in here that have different views on God or higher powers. You know, there's folks that don't believe in God. There's others who don't believe that God even exists, and some believe he's there, but they don't have any faith. Now, you look at that, and you start thinking, those people can get sober somehow using this higher power that I was so unfamiliar with. You know, it's got to be something there for me. So I've been calling it that ever since. I still hesitate to use the term God when I talk about anything. I do believe, and a lot of you have probably heard me say this before when I lead, my mother prayed me into this fellowship. And the way I was and the way I drank and the way I behaved, for me to be here today, sober, have what I have, took an act of God pretty much. Because by no way in the world should I have what I have because of the way I was. If you get that. You know, I didn't do anything to deserve the rewards I've reaped from coming to this fellowship. So that reinforces my belief that there is a higher power. That's what I choose to call him. That was my mother prayed for me every day. Eventually it stuck. So, let's see. Part of getting it, so you understand the higher power thing, is right here in the book. It says these three statements. First, Alcoholics Anonymous does not demand you believe in anything. All you got to do is show up. Well, that was easy enough for me. You know, that's kind of what I was doing. Okay. All of its 12 steps are suggestions. They're not, they're not etched in stone. Two, to get sober and to stay sober, you don't have to do all of step two right now. I like that too, you know, because I was just kind of going with the flow. That's how I lived, really. You know, I didn't really plan ahead. I didn't look back. I was just day to day, week to week. Whatever happened, happened. And then the third is all you really need is a truly open mind. Just resign from the debating society and quit trying to decide what came first, the chicken or the egg. Now that was me too. I was always arguing with what was, you know, why are things this way? You know, why am I the guy that's got to be like this? You know, why me? So that was a big part of me. All right. There's different things in here about, I started to get opinions about different folks, which is bad. Can't do that. It caused me to go back out my own thinking, so to speak. But it's the example they showed is humility and intellect can be provided as long as we place humility first. It took me a while to realize, you know, I'm just an average guy. I'm probably even a little below average guy. I'm not a rocket scientist. I'm not going to be anything special. Although I really find it ironic that a guy could be a drunk like I was and behaving the way I was, and I thought I was something special. You know, that's kind of talk about crazy thinking. So in here, you learn that, you know, that's there's so many different parts of it. I used to, part of my thing with God was that I used to ask for stuff not out of need, but out of want. You know, like the little kid for Christmas making the impossible Christmas list. Or, get me out of this jackpot, God, you know, and I'll never do it again. Those were my relationship with the higher power. And that's the wrong way to go about it. See? And like his book says, at no time did we ask what God's will was for us. Instead, we had been telling him what it ought to be, and that was me. you know, with the why me's, you know, and all this other crap. And if you bail me out of this jackpot, I'll never do it again. But when you get your humility and you start to realize that the problem is yourself, and you've opened that door by first admitting you're alcoholic and you have no power over alcohol, that's when you realize that, you know, you've got to be ready to turn your will and your life over to a higher power. And you've opened that door. So, let's see. We always were asking for something for nothing. I said, and I had not cleaned house so that the grace of God could enter. There is no deep or meaningful sense had we ever taken stock of ourselves, made amends to those we had harmed, or freely given to another human being. That was me. I was never responsible for anything. You know, it wasn't my fault. You know, things were the way they were because of some other outside factor. It wasn't me. So, sanity is defined as soundness of mind, yet no alcohol soberly analyzing his destructive behavior, whether the destruction fell on the dining room furniture or his own moral fiber, can claim soundness of mind. That's the insanity part, you know. We can do all these crazy things and be really, really stupid, and we can't, when we really analyze ourselves thoroughly, you can't look at your life like that and think that that's okay, that that's normal. And I think I started feeling that way probably a couple of years before I got here. But I started drinking at about 13 years of age, and I got here at 32. So it took me a while to realize, you know, what... And even at that, I didn't come in here to quit drinking or to straighten up my life. I just wanted to control my drinking. So even with all that, I don't know what that worked out to, about 20 years of drinking, roughly. So anyways, so you admit your powers over alcohol, you have to become willing to accept a higher power and choose one, you know, that a higher power can return us to sanity. It all just kind of plays on each other, you know. That the steps, you can't take the steps, go by jumping in and doing number 5 and then go over to number 8 back to number 1. You know, they're in order for a reason, and they work quite well. So although when I first came in, I can vouch for this, they always told us, they gave us a big book and told us to start at chapter 5. You know, whoever reads a book starting at chapter 5 or halfway through the book, but they don't do that anymore, you know, and they're big on working the steps nowadays, which is a good thing. So I don't know if anybody want to ask me any questions about that. I really have trouble trying to define that, you know what I mean? It's just like trying to define a spirit, you know. How do you do that? How do you make that tangible for people? I have trouble with it. It just happened for me. Keep coming back, do what they ask you to do. Get humble, realize you're just an average person, and start living an honest life. That was another big thing for me. I couldn't start telling those little white lies, you know, because pretty soon they were pretty big stories, and I just can't. Once I got away from that life, I had to quit lying and cheating and stealing and everything, and I had to get humble because I had to realize I was just an average person, and I needed to get well. So, does anybody want questions, or you want me to try to move on?
Do you want to
answer
it, or do you
want to
just... It's up to you.
No, go ahead. Keep moving.
Yeah, go on.
Okay. Everybody's all right with that?
Sure.
Okay. And again, here we go with the step 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand Him. Again, that's pretty tough to define. I think we're all a little different. We all have our opinions on what he or she might look like and all that kind of stuff. But you have to be willing and make a decision to turn your life over. And I guess by that I mean, you know, it's let go, let God. Probably all heard that phrase. I can't, he can, why not let him? That kind of stuff. That's pretty hard to do, especially when you're new. But as you keep going and keep trying these things and keep listening to this stuff, you start seeing it work. You see it in other people. And that was another thing that made a believer out of me, more so than some stuff, was that, you know, I used to call them little coincidences. But, you know, they're not coincidences. You know, God's putting people in my path that I needed to see that day or during that time to help me realize, you know what, there is more to this than meets the eye. And like I say, it's pretty darn hard to explain it. But once you've allowed that willingness, which is your came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, that gets you to step three, which is an action step, which means you have to work at this one. You know, the other two you can do. This one you have to kind of work at daily, turning your life over to the care of someone else, a higher power. So, everybody's done that. Yeah. A lot of people try to hold on to their old feelings about controlling their life. Your self will run riot. You know, just because you get sober doesn't mean you should take all your willpower back. I mean, the willpower for me is what got me here. I didn't have any, you know, but I seemed to think I did. I thought I knew all the answers. I thought I could bail myself out of any situation or make things right. That's not the case. But okay, let's see here. I know I'm bouncing around for you. I hate that, but yeah, okay, that's just the remaining steps of AA program come in. Nothing short of continuous action upon these steps as a way of life can bring the much desired result. So in other words, once you've taken these one, two, and three, you start working three, and you'll start working on the rest of the steps after these, and you'll start to see some change in your life. You'll be sober, but you really got to do these things in order to start realizing all the good things that come along with being sober. You know, you can get sober and still be a crazy man. You know? So, but this is the last paragraph in step three, but it's something that until I glanced through this book today, I've been doing, I can't tell you for how long. I've been here 41 years. I've been probably doing this for 40. But it says, in all times of emotional disturbance or indecision, we can pause, ask for quiet, and in the stillness simply say, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. Holy moly, here I've been doing that and not even realizing. I was telling Mike, and I'm not, I may have even said it here before I started, I'm not much of a reader. You know, I got a big book, I got a 12 and 12, and I got some stuff like that, and I'm more of a visuals kind of guy, hands-on kind of guy. You know how you can tell people something and they get it? Well, I'm the kind of a person that you have to show me and let me do it myself, kind of. So I can't quote verses out of books and tell you how it worked for me real well, but I am an example of these things in these books, because when I go back to refer to them, are what you just kind of subconsciously start doing, because you're around people that are in the same predicament you are, trying to get straightened around, trying to get your life in order, and you keep coming back. As soon as you fall off the wagon, it all goes away. So that's why step number one is really very important. You got to accept the fact that you're an alcoholic and that your life has become unmanageable. And then two, believe that a power greater than yourself can restore you to sanity. And then three, try to get him to work with you, if that's how you want to call it. But that's really about all I can say about all that. I hope it helped somebody. It helped me a little bit. It made me go back and review some stuff. So.
Any questions? All right. Thank you, Tom. So now we'll open this up for our question and answer portion. So anybody here in the room, you can go ahead and raise your hand. We'll get you the microphone. If you're on Zoom, just go ahead and unmute yourself and ask a question if you have one. So we've got a hand here in the room. We'll go ahead and get started with Jeff.
Hi, Tom.
Oh, thanks.
I'm Jeff. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jeff.
Thank you very much for doing this. I really appreciate it. Step three, turning our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. You know, that whole question of will, and we hear people say, well, I got to do more of God's will, less of Jeff's will, you know. Mm-hmm. And I get it. The trick and the challenge for me is figuring out which is which, you know. And I don't know if I'll ever be absolutely sure. And when I first came in here, I really kind of rebelled against this step because it sounded to me like, well, we want you to make yourself into a cork and throw yourself into the stream and just go where the stream takes you. Just bob away, no volition whatsoever. No exercise of the free will that I think God gave me, you know? So I felt that way, yet I recognized that my willfulness and stubbornness was a big part of what screwed me up. So I guess my question is, you know, what light you can shed on distinguishing between your will and God's will, and what you might have to say about the proposition of, you know, striving against challenges and odds to do what you think is right. Yeah. You know, even if maybe it doesn't seem popular. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think I do. I was going to say, but you just touched on it. You know, when I'm questioning things, I always revert back to just do what's right, do the right thing, do no harm, kind of a stance. You know, I don't think you're not supposed to give up all your free will, but you make clearer decisions. You think about things more than you used to. With me, you know, my will was shoot from the hip, you know. I'll worry about it later. After I got sober and started doing things, I realized, you know, that's what gets me into trouble. So if I pause and think about something, it gives you a clear head to make better decisions there. And that's probably through your higher power teaching you to slow down, step back, and think about it. And then, again, do no harm and do the right thing. And if you do that, I don't think you're ever going to get into trouble. I can't think of anybody that has. But that's how I look at it. And that's pretty much how I had to get through everything. And I still strove. You know, I ran around as a carpet installer for 20 years. And I when I got sober, I went back to school and I became a paramedic. And, you know, I still had goals and plans for myself, and I got an education, and you know, I've saved some lives, I've delivered babies, I've done all kinds of stuff that when I was running around before, I never would have thought possible, let alone somebody else that knew me. So you know, you still have the ability to make choices, you know, and just keep in mind that your higher power in AA is helping you do that.
Got another question here in the room.
Yeah, good evening. My name's Ike. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, hi,
it's a great day to be sober. I told you they'd be hard, didn't I? The rest of them are all easy.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm holding you to it.
Do you believe that God has chosen you to live long enough to pass this message on? I mean, most of the people in this room would be dead if it wasn't for God choosing them.
Yeah. I couldn't quit here. Do I believe I was chosen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think anybody in this room, if you have the opportunity to stay here and grow here, you were chosen. I've known lots of drinkers. I have a brother who drank himself to death, an older brother, who would talk to me. He couldn't get it. Very smart man, commercial artist. He was doing advertisement for Selmer Band Instruments and Chef Pierre. He was a big deal. But alcohol got a hold of him, and he ended up not knowing who I was or who his mother was or anything else. And he ended up dying that way. So you're chosen, believe it. There's no way a guy that lived my kind of life should end up with all the good things that I have. So, yeah, that's true.
Who else has a question for Tom? Anybody on Zoom?
No,
we've got Ryan.
Oh,
Ryan's got a question for you.
Oh.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
All right.
Hey, Tom. Thanks. How much would you say that your ego interfered with you achieving steps 2 and 3? You know, when we initially come into this program, we kind of have a big ego and not really ready to, you know, give up.
Yeah. They were pretty. My ego got in the way for a lot of that stuff. My ego got in the way of announcing that I was an alcoholic at a meeting probably for a year. You know, I wouldn't stand up and tell anybody that. And it's I don't know how it is nowadays, but you know, when I was growing up, the image of an alcoholic was, you know, an old street bum in ratty, raggedy old clothes drinking under a bridge, you know. And that's what I thought it was, and I was just not gonna accept but that was me. I mean, I had a job and I had a wife and a couple of kids, you know. I thought I was a big deal. But that's not the case at all. Like I said last week, there's doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs in here. And there's priests and nuns, which I was floored when I saw a couple of them. So, you know, being a non-religious kind of guy, and I'm thinking, whoa, what are they doing in here? So it's a... The ego thing, you know, once you get past it, once you're here and you keep coming, you're going to get past it eventually to where you can admit you're an alcoholic and then you can start working on the other stuff. And it just, like I said, it just kind of all keeps snowballing as you go along. And pretty soon you're sober 41 years. You know? Who knew?
Hello, family. My name is Tahi, and I'm an alcoholic. I wanted to ask you, how long did it take? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can now.
Okay, not how long, but did your perception of God change to look different once you came into the rooms? I mean, you know, compared to what you were growing up with, or whatever perception you had of God, did that change once you came in the room and decided to turn your will over to the care of God as you understood it? Did your understanding of God change?
Yeah. No, I would have to say it didn't, but I wasn't a person that was brought up, you know, I lived in a Catholic neighborhood, all the kids that were Catholics, and they told horror stories about getting their knuckles beat with rulers and different stuff like that. And I went to public schools. We didn't have any of that. I mean, I didn't get paddled until I was in ninth grade. So, but my mom and father were religious enough and had enough love in our house that I never thought God was a punishing type of God. Had I been in a different neighborhood or raised in a different family, that might be a harder hurdle to overcome. But for me, he's a giving, loving person, and you know, when you do the right thing and you do no harm, you're rewarded. It's easy.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And I've enjoyed your lead. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Diane Pearson. And I believed when I came into the rooms in a higher power greater than me. I had no doubt in that. But the problem I had was restoring me to sanity. When I came through these doors, I really thought I was insane. I had been seeing a psychiatrist and a psychologist and under medications, and I was getting sicker. You know? I had no idea that the cause of my sickness was my alcoholism. And for me to believe that this power greater than me was going to restore me to sanity was a difficult concept for me. Mm-hmm. Did you have a problem with that? And if yes, how'd you deal with that?
Well, I didn't think I was insane. You know, I didn't think I was crazy. I came here and learned that I was. if that makes sense to you. By listening to other people and how they behaved, and then started looking at myself as to how I was behaving. I was crazy. I was not medicating for it or anything of the kind. So I can't tell you how hard that would be. I will share with you, I have a daughter right now who's insane. She's medicating. She has a doctor that's gone as far as tell her she needs to have a shock treatment on her head. And she's thinking about it. And I've been telling her, all you need to do is put the bottle away. You know, she's 45 years old, and she's convinced herself that she might need shock therapy. That's alcohol. She's a Rutgers graduate. She has 2 degrees. And, you know, so I don't know how to get through to her, and I don't know how it would be to be like you, feeling that you were medicating and talking to doctors, because that's what she was doing. But, you know, I would love to see her sitting there with you, really, because this works. And once you realize what your problem is, you're on the road. So, yeah.
Who else has a question for Tom?
I guess we're done here.
No. Anyone else on Zoom? All right, Kevin. Kevin's got a question.
Oh, Kevin.
I got 7 minutes of
Kevin,
questions.
I said Kevin.
Hi, Tom. Thanks very much for coming again. And it is hard standing up there talking about the different steps. And the good thing of it is it gives you a chance to review that and stuff like that. My question involves, you've been sober a really long time, and somehow it just happened for you. Could you describe what it was like for the first couple of years? They told you to start with Chapter 5, and you'd go to meetings, and did you go to a lot of meetings? Did you, describe, because it sounded like you got most of your program through osmosis and experientially through other people.
Right.
So if you could, expand on how that kind of came to you and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I was so taken by the people in these rooms, that how happy they seemed to be, and the way they looked. I mean, you could just tell they were happy. They were doing good things. And but I did the 90 meetings in 90 days, and then it just kept going. I just went to meetings every day after that, and that's kind of how it happened. And I I probably built myself a pretty good foundation after about 10 years or 12 years of doing that. But I think like the second year I was in, I was involved with a, believe it or not, a bocce league. Not real masculine, but a friend of mine talked me into it. And they needed a guy to store the beer. So I said, I'll bring it over to my house. You know, here, I'm only sober a year and a half, 2 years. I got 50 cases of beer in my garage. But I didn't touch it. I was going to meetings, and I did talk to a few people in the program. They said, yeah, you probably ought to get that out of there. So I did that. I took their advice. Because, you know. But yeah, it was just occupying my time. I'd go to work, I'd come home, I'd go to meetings. And I did have a short period in my sobriety that people, I don't know, I shouldn't tell people this, but it's part of my story, is that I had some people tell me, you kind of get into AA and you grow up and you grow out. I took that literally, I grow out. And I quit going to meetings, but I have remained sober. But I quit going to meetings. And Todd Daly always said, well, you rub shoulders with everybody. And that's what I did. I had to go to lunch with AA people. I'd see AA people and we'd talk. And so I always stayed around it, not quite in these rooms. And then I started having some things happen in my life where my brother was terribly ill with his drinking. I had another brother commit suicide. My father passed away, and my mother was going downhill. So I'm the only one left in the family that's got to try and get a hold of things. And I'm sober, and I'm trying to do the right thing. But I'm kind of fighting it. And one day, I'll talk to you a little bit about coincidences. My wife goes to the YMCA. She goes to the YMCA one day, and who's there but Ike and Mary Ann? And they said, how's Tom doing? Tell him we'd like to see him at a meeting. So they said, I forget how she found out. They were going to Dobbs Group that next Thursday night or something. So I went, and I've been back ever since. And that was, I can't even tell you how long ago that was, 15 years or more maybe. But so that's one of those little coincidences. But I did. I got away from it. And it you can do it. I don't recommend it. Because it's really, it makes you feel good when you leave here. You know what I mean? There's nothing like the energy I get out of going to a meeting and meeting people and seeing people and talking to them. It's just a great thing. It's a great way of life.
Anybody on Zoom have a question?
I don't see anybody.
Okay, you got me now. Oh, no, you don't go anywhere.
Thank you very much.
No.
Thank you, Tom. Does anybody in membership have any announcements?